So what I really wanted to do with our headquarters, even before COVID, but even more so now, is to make it feel like our homes, my home, our store. So it's kind of like a second home.
Space shapes behaviors. Behaviors create culture. And it's culture that drives results. It's why we're celebrating a century of success with Business Furniture. Thanks for being here as part of our 100th year anniversary and this special podcast with host Gary Dick.
Welcome to the More Than a Chair podcast. I'm Gary Dick, very excited to be here today for this special series celebrating with Business Furniture 100 years in business. And this monumental occasion really centered around living the legacy. And we're sitting down with Business Furniture partners, clients, friends, innovators focused on the future of business. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by Mina Starziak-Hawk, the co-founder and owner of Two Chicks and a Hammer, also, of course, the co-star of HGTV's hit show Good Bones. She's a realtor, a mother, and recently partnered with Business Furniture to open her first office space for the company, a major moment for this team that is so focused on revitalizing Indianapolis and really shining a spotlight on Indy one house at a time. Mina, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I always love chatting with you.
Yeah. You are a proud Midwesterner.
Yes, yes,
very
sir.
Much so. And again, it's so reflected, which I think is very cool about Good Bones and how it shines a really cool light on Indianapolis. But how long have you been in Indianapolis?
I was born in Indianapolis. Everett, yep. Yeah. Grew up on the west side, right across the street from the Colts complex. And the farthest I ever went was Bloomington for college.
Yeah. And what is it about it? You obviously, you really love mm-hmm. Indianapolis, right?
I do. I mean, it's population-wise, we're a big city, but it doesn't feel like that. So, you know, love it or hate it, you know someone that knows someone that knows your best friend. It's just, you know, it's that Midwestern thing that I think people like about the Midwest and kind of, you know, that's what they think of. Like, we're friendly and we've got cows and corn, but we actually have such a cool downtown. I mean, in the last 10, 15 years, it's just changed dramatically. So not only do you still get that really friendly feeling from everyone, you also get to do all the cool stuff that the big cities, like, you know, that you think of, like New York and LA, we have all that stuff.
Yeah. And again, that really comes through in the show. You've been very intentional, I think, from the beginning about putting a good light, if you will, shining a spotlight on Indianapolis.
I mean, what's really important and I think what made our show work was the relationship, not only with our production company, but with the network and them wanting Indy to be a character in the show. So, you know, there's something in every episode where I think a lot of the older format shows, you didn't even know where they were. You're like, are you in the States? I don't understand these numbers. I don't understand like where your accent maybe is from. And although those were successful, I think people really like being able to pin down like, this is the place. This is how much it costs to live there. These are the cool things they can do. And I could go there. I could visit there. I could move there. I mean, it's actually attainable when you watch the show.
Okay. Before we get in, we want to talk about your cool new space that you've moved into. But before we do, give us the latest. Give us the scoop on what's new on Good Bones and all the projects. Because I think you're working on multiple projects.
Yeah. So we are painfully behind on season 7. Due to a slew of, you know, COVID materials and just terrible contractors. but we're rocking and rolling. Hopefully that's still going to be airing in June. We started filming season 8 about a month ago. So it's just full steam ahead. And I am days away from finishing the spinoff, Good Bones Risky Business, that's just really cool, much different film style. It's more kind of like Caps style. Like, they filmed literally everything I did and said. So I think it's going to be a little bit more edgy take on what they usually see on Good Bones. And then, you know, on top of that, we've got the store that's coming up on its 2-year anniversary in June. And we finally have
a retail store, right?
Yeah, retail store in Bates Hendricks. I launched a kids line, Jack and Drew, after my kids, that's in there and online as well. And we finally got all settled in our forever home office, which is, we just call headquarters.
Very good. Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Because you are literally just in. Where is it located and how did you select that location?
Although we started in Fountain Square, our first permanent roots we put down were in Bates Hendricks. I bought a warehouse and a house as a package that was 2 doors down, and that ended up being our storage warehouse, which is now our store, Two Chicks Sister Co. And the house was our office and is now our Airbnb. But because we had kind of put our roots down there, we wanted to stay and keep everything really close. So we found pretty much catty corner, an empty lot in Bates Hendricks that was affordable, and acquired that. And that was the easy part. Then it was, you know, a 2-year process, I'll say. Fight might seem aggressive, but, you know, getting the floor plans made, going through the variance process and building and all of that.
Well, talk about the building, because I think it's about 6,000 square feet or so in total. And how many people do you have working there?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more than we need. But what I wanted to do was build as large as was allowable and then make it not look huge. I mean, if you come to it, it looks like a house, and then it just goes back forever. But our biggest issue over the years is outgrowing. We outgrow every space and we end up with storage units and all this kind of stuff. So I really wanted a large space with lots of different options. I have never in my entire life needed a conference room. I put one in here just in case, because we would like to start taking on more client renovations. So now we have this beautiful conference room decked out with beautiful, I put office furniture in quotes because it feels like a dining room almost, kind of. And we've got offices and co-working space and a phone call room if you need a private space, and just kind of packed as much in as we could.
Is there kind of a community element to it? Do you want to kind of engage the community in that?
Of course. I mean, we are, because we're so close to the store, our headquarters not only houses our, I think we have 11 or 12 like full-time employees, and then a few that are at the store as well. But it has, I mean, our contractors are coming in, our vendors that we work with come in, and not only do they come in for meetings, but a lot of the build was them. So we have a beautiful metal and glass wall that's our Iron Timbers guys. All our furniture is, you know, the office furniture company that we're celebrating today. We have a beautiful mural on the wall that's a local artist. So it's all little bits of indie and the people that we've worked with for a long time. And because it's right across the street from the store, and it houses our e-com fulfillment. If someone wants something in the store and we're out of a size, we can just run across the street and get it. So it's just really nice to be able to cater more easily to people that come into the store as well.
Very cool. Now, I would think, based on your background in construction and building, that the process would be easy. Was it different doing this versus the home rebuilds and all the remodeling that you do?
I mean, commercial is definitely a different beast, and I got a little bit of a taste of it with the store, learning about ADA requirements, those kind of things. And it was the same with our headquarters. You know, just commercial code is different, and residential code is a big enough of a beast to understand in itself, and it's ever changing. So commercial code definitely was a learning curve for me and my team.
Yeah. How about the work environment? Are you hybrid? Are you all in the office, a mix?
I think due to just kind of necessity, a lot of us worked from home or honestly from our cars during COVID, but we don't really have the type of business where you can be super functional from home. You could maybe have a one day like office day at home, but our employees are all on site every day, checking on properties, taking pictures, running materials, gathering content. So even like, you know, our social media marketing team of one is always out on site. So what I really wanted to do with our headquarters, even before COVID, but even more so now, is to make it feel like our homes, my home, our store. So it's kind of like a second home.
Right.
You come in, it's comfortable. You can pick a couch. You can sit at the dining table. You can, you know, sit in your office if you need privacy, but it's got a little bit of everything.
That you mentioned home. You say you look at it, it's a home. You really are trying to engender that home feeling, especially as we get into a post-COVID environment, to make it kind of like a home.
Yeah, right? And the area we're located in is very, it's mixed-use area. Along East Street, there's commercial and residential. A lot of the residential is zoned commercial because someone waved a wand, I don't know, a decade ago and did that.
Right.
So we were very purposeful in the design of the outside of the property. So it looks like a house, but serves our commercial needs really well. And it just fits in.
Are you and the team more collaborators or more just kind of head down, you know?
It's a little bit of both. And I think one of the things that I kind of always felt, but I think a lot of people romanticized being able to work from home, and then they had to do it, and it can be very challenging, particularly if you have children.
Right.
And I kind of always felt the importance of so much organic progress happens when you're in a room with people. So I'm working on something. Let's say I'm working on a spec sheet for a house and I'm stuck on a lighting package and MJ is sitting out in the common area. I can be like, MJ, come in here, help me work through this, and we can work through it in 3 minutes. Whereas if I was stuck on a lighting package and I had to send him an email and was like, this is kind of what I'm thinking, and he'll send me 3 options and I won't, you know, it takes a day to come to a decision. Whereas if we're all in the same space, we can organically pull upon each other for inspiration and assistance. And it just, it's more functional for us at least.
Yeah, people talk a lot these days about culture, you know, company culture. Is there a culture that you have that you can describe?
Definitely. Yeah. Finley and I, who's my chief of staff, were actually just talking about this yesterday because we're looking for an in-house bookkeeper. And the biggest challenge in hiring, I think, across the board for us is that culture fit, because we are such – We're a weird beast. It's, you know, it's not construction and it's not design consultation and it's a TV show. And so it's this weird version of everything. And we have across the board, you know, different ages and, you know, single, no kids. Mm-hmm. We have everyone. But you have to have that type of personality where when we don't get the phone call that 30 doors have been delivered, we all go. And we unload the doors. I do it. Over the weekend, I was installing sod and tilling a yard with my other, I have two, like, I guess, higher level executives. We were doing it. So you really have to have that kind of intestinal fortitude, I think, to be a good culture fit with two chicks. We're definitely a little rough around the edges.
Yeah. Now, how about, do you feel a pressure really to keep everybody connected?
I mean, during COVID, it was, yes, very challenging. Hard to make people feel connected, feel like they were invested in what they're doing, because we weren't seeing our projects every day and they weren't seeing the progress every day. Everyone was just kind of operating in a bubble. So it was very hard to, I think, to feel motivated once you got past the romanticized, I caught up on all my emails portion of the day.
Yeah. How about COVID? Because you mentioned during COVID, the challenges that presented, just from a supply chain, I mean, all kinds of things that had to be a real impact on your business.
There was definitely the big picture supply chain issues that I think almost all industries were facing. But from a labor point of view as well, everyone was stuck in their homes. So they were all looking at the things that they'd hated forever, but they weren't staring at 40 hours a week. And they wanted to do all those. So not only were the bigger builders feeling the pain, now we don't have massive companies. We're, you know, using small subcontractors, our tile guy, and they were booked out months and months because of all these smaller home renovation projects. So it was challenging to find labor, materials. We were building cedar fences. Our neighborhoods do not merit cedar fences, but there was no pine.
Wow.
So we didn't have a choice.
Mm-hmm. I know you're selective when it comes to partnerships. For the office, when it came to selecting that furniture partner, what was the thought process in selecting Business Furniture?
My goal going into college, post-college, for my career was to have a job where I could wear yoga pants and a hoodie. And I think that's kind of, you know, crept into every aspect as my company's grown. And we were looking at other, you know, office furniture companies. And I was like, that's a crappy pantsuit. That's what I've been trying to avoid my whole life. I don't want that. It was like the big, bulky, dark wood or completely plain with no personality. It just felt very, very cookie cutter, very uninspirational. And then when we were presented with the opportunity to work with these guys, you walk into their showroom and it doesn't feel like an office furniture showroom. It feels like a house furniture showroom almost. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. And all the pieces are very functional. So it just, it worked. It fit.
Yeah. From a kind of a day-to-day thing, managing your team, the personalities, you've got cameras and the production folks that are involved there. How do you manage that on a daily? And I'm sure some days are more stressful than others, but how do you?
Well, I'm medicated. But I've learned, I think I grew up being very flexible. I have a huge family. It's very crazy. It's all yours, mine, and ours. So it was kind of bred into me to just be okay with chaos. And that continues now. And it's a controlled chaos, hopefully most of the time. But it really is like I said, you know, there are days. It happened yesterday. We had to go unload doors because, you know, we didn't get the phone call. So we're just constantly pivoting. And again, part of the culture fit, being able to have that mindset of I have a plan and it's a good plan, but if I need to shift, I can, and it's okay. So it's just, you know, keeping that, you know, the end game in mind.
In mind. What does keep you going as a business owner? Because you're doing so many things. You're in front of the camera doing all that stuff. But being a business owner, there are things you have to do that can kind of get in the way. What do you have, an inspiration? Do you have anything that kind of drives you? You talk about seeing that end goal down there. Is that maybe part of it?
My husband and I, we kind of every few months have a touch base and say, are you doing too much? Am I doing too much? Do we need to adjust? Do we need to change the sitter hours? But I think the overall consensus that we've come to is we both really like working. I probably thrive in the chaos a little more than some people, but we want to work, and let's work really hard now so we can do whatever we want, you know, in 10 years. I think if I were to be able to retire tomorrow, I would not. I would hate my life. It'd be awful. So I think just enjoying what I do, it obviously is a huge help.
Back to the office and the design process, because you're involved in that, obviously in the homes that you do, but do you have a favorite part of the design process?
Probably twofold. I really enjoy, for me, the floor planning process is, I don't feel like I have a design brain. I have like a problem solving, like math brain. And it's kind of like a math equation. I have this square footage that's in this shape because a lot of times we have the existing floor plan. And I really like figuring out the solution or options of solutions to that problem, which is the floor plan. If we have a new build, that's kind of hard for me because there are no limitations. And that can... can be tough.
Right.
I really enjoy that portion. And then also when the mood board starts coming together, I usually will find something that I love. Let's say it's a vanity that I stumbled upon for an old house that I want to use. And that's kind of where I start on this vanity. That's what the whole house is going to be designed around. And so I like that portion of it as well.
What about from the television standpoint, being a celebrity, being people, you have to get, I know you get recognized around town. And what's that process like?
It's obviously changed. We're going into season 8. And a lot of times doing TV, you just feel like a dancing monkey. Like, this isn't what I set out to do. I'm not, you know, I'm not saving the world. Like, this is not important. Like, and it doesn't feel, you know, valuable sometimes, particularly when you get into the conversation of people on the not happy side of gentrification. And that's not why I went into this business. It wasn't to hurt people or, you know, steal housing. So a lot of times it feels like there's lacking a purpose. And then I run into people who the show is so incredibly meaningful for.
Yes,
whether
right.
their kid was in Riley Hospital for 6 months getting treatment and they watched the show every day and that's what, you know, was their bright light, which I can't even begin to understand because I've never had that challenge or something that I needed to be able to look forward to. But it is for a lot of people. And it's, you know, that aspirational mother-daughter relationship for a lot of people. You inspired me to reach out to my mom. Like those things that make me realize that people gain a lot more meaning from the show than I necessarily understand being the one on the filming side of it.
Yeah. What's it like working with your mom?
Oh my gosh. You've met my mom.
Yeah, of course.
She's crazy.
Crazy. Yeah.
It is never boring. It is, you know, once you think you have her figured out, you don't. So, you know, she always keeps you on your toes and she's just, you know, she's at the point in her life where she's doing whatever she wants to do and she loves it. So she is filming less. She's not having to do the business side of stuff because I bought her out a few years ago. So she's just really enjoying, you know, traveling and visiting grandkids. And she's downsizing. Everyone's freaking out because she's selling all of her stuff online.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
She's moving into her little carriage house that we did for the show. So she's just really in that simplifying portion of her life.
What, and back to your doing things meaningful, because I would certainly argue that what you do is very meaningful for Indianapolis and the city and its image. You talk about talent and talent attraction and retention, which is such a huge issue here. What you all do plays a role in that.
I think it's one of the things that gets completely overlooked, definitely underrated, is, you know, the show can be annoying because we take up a lot of parking on your block if we're doing a house, but what the show has done for Indianapolis is huge. Nothing gets done in the city without people wanting to be in the city and there being a tax base. And our production crew spends millions of dollars just on their hotel stays a year, let alone the small businesses that we go to lunch to every single day, the vendors that we show on the show that now are getting orders across the country for things. There's so many things in this like trickle-down effect from the show that get overlooked that are just huge for Indy. We have a great relationship with Chris Gall at Visit Indy because their job is to see that.
Right.
And so they love it and they appreciate it. And we have people moving here from, particularly post-COVID, from the coasts. I run into people, I would have thought the first couple were lying because it sounds absurd to me, but that say they moved here from San Francisco or LA or, you know, New York because of the show, because they saw like, oh, Indy is cool. And that just wasn't a thing before.
Yeah. Well, I could see it. I could see it certainly has real impact. You know, I just thought when you talk about the taping here and the shoots here, you know, the legislature, and I don't know if you guys were involved or at least observing, but approved some incentives.
Yes.
Does that impact you? And again, incentives for movie production, mm-hmm. digital production that had been talked about for a long time to help some of these.
It's huge. And I think a lot of people also don't realize that the cities that seem to have, like, why are there so many shows in Atlanta? Because they get tax breaks to produce shows there, or they make it easier for them to produce shows because it's very difficult to actually do. And I know Indy's been talking about that for a long time. They kind of, you know, they're stuck with us. We're a successful show. So whether Indy gave the tax breaks or not, we'd still be around. But it does attract so much more talent to Indy because it opens up job opportunities and, you know, you just have more people interested in the area.
Yeah. Is there a certain feel, you know, that you want people to have when they watch the show? Do you feel a certain way?
Yes. And I think because Mom and I and my team we are not actors. We could not be someone else if we tried because of that, because of the production company we have that edits well and shows that, and the network that supports that. I want people to watch the show and come into the store and think they know me, which, and they do. It's not all of me, but that's me. That's Austin. Like, you know, by watching the show that you could run into Austin on the street and chit chat with him and give him a hug and he's going to be that person. I've had the opportunity just being in this world now to meet people and my dreams are crushed. They are not who I hoped they would
be. Right,
and that's just the most tragic thing in the world. Like, they're not, your hero is not your hero. So I think just wanting people to feel it's relatable and it's attainable and, you know, aspirational, inspirational, you know, however you want to take it. I think it does get a lot of wives into trouble because it makes it look easier to make their husbands do certain projects. I get a lot of heat about that. But all in a way where they're like, yeah, you're my sister, you're my daughter, you're my mom.
Yeah.
It just feels really cool.
Okay, what's next? Good Bones continuing season 8. And remind me again, Good Bones, Risky?
Risky Business.
It is business.
Yes,
okay.
Risky Business.
Talk a little bit about that because I think that's really an interesting spin-off.
It's very cool. As if all the homes I buy with two chicks and Good Bones aren't risky purchases enough, I made an even worse purchase. And it's one of the oldest houses in Fountain Square. Very cool, like old Victorian. The guy that owned it, oh my God, I'm going to space his name now, actually teamed up with the Stutz.
Okay.
And like they invented the carburetor. This guy invented the carburetor. So in its time, this was like, it was the house. And it, you know, has been chopped up in squatters and it was eventually caught on fire. And then I bought it. And so it's 6 episodes about this whole house, which is 6,300 square feet. It's the main house and then 2 carriage house apartments. There's a speakeasy. It's just really, really cool. And having the season about one house, we get into a lot more of like the nitty gritty that you kind of have to gloss over in Good Bones.
And again, so very different.
Very different. Yeah. When I say cop style, I mean the second they see me, they had a person. We don't have this in Good Bones, that lived on site, not lived because there was no toilets or running water, but he was there from sunup to sundown in case I showed up with a camera filming everything. There was nothing that didn't get caught. There were things that I tried to not have on camera actively, that's particularly a bit of a blow up where I left set and shut the camera off that was on my dashboard and forgot there was one in the back seat. And there was crying and yelling and a phone call to my contractor and then another more crying and yelling. And I thought it was all not on camera, and it was. Uh-huh. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good tease.
You got to leave the set if you're going to cry. There's no crying like on a construction site.
On a construction site. Yeah, very good. Well, Mina Starzyak-Hawk, it has been a real treat to catch up with you, as always. And it's great to hear your what you have coming up next, because it's going to be very exciting, and very exciting for Indianapolis as well. I know your partnership with Business Furniture has been extremely positive now that you're in your new space, your new headquarters home downtown. So again, thanks for joining us, and thanks for all you do for Indianapolis,
of course,
too.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And thank you for joining us on this edition of the More Than a Chair podcast. It is a podcast series that celebrates business furniture and 100 years in business. I'm Gary Dick. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
For more on how you can reimagine your workspace and help bring your teams back to better, come and see us over at businessfurniture.net.